Our next guest, Dr. Robert Rosenberg, who's an expert in the field of sleep disorders. He's a doctor who's board certified in sleep medicine, and he's a medical director of two sleep disorder clinics. So when it comes to sleep, Dr. Rosenberg is the guy. And the news today of why we're bringing this up, this is from a medical expert. This is just breaking in the Michael Jackson civil trial, where his family is suing the concert promoter over Dr. Conrad Murray. And we've learned that Michael Jackson went 60 days, I repeat, 60 days without any real sleep, which obviously he was deteriorating. I mean, he was a disaster on many levels. So, doctor, to discuss this, and I want to ask questions like how long can human beings go without sleep? And just a lot of questions about sleep. Dr. Robert Rosenberg, based in Arizona. Doctor, how are you, sir?
Great. How are you today, Andy?
Good. And we had you on our program once before about sleep issues, including insomnia and sexsomnia. And you blew it out of the water, and I'll tell you, we got a lot of feedback from you. And I just remember reading about sexsomnia and thinking, oh, that's impossible. But you were very clear that that's a real disorder. Is that correct, doctor?
It is. It is. I've even seen a few since we had the conversation.
And once again, what is that disorder?
Sexsomnia is basically a form of sleepwalking. It occurs during deep sleep. People get aroused out of deep sleep. The brain remains in a deep state of sleep. The limbic system and the motor system awaken, and especially the limbic system, which has to do with risk, reward, sexual gratification, begins to drive the patient's behaviors, and there's a dissociation. And so like sleepwalkers, the person has no memory if awoken from what he's doing. If you talk to them, they don't make any sense because they're actually in deep or delta sleep. And unfortunately, in some cases, it's resulted in abuse and in some cases rape. And there's all forms of sexsomnia, and it's been used in some cases of trials. It has been abused. It's not always the truth, but it is a cogent defense in some cases, no doubt about it. And I've had several patients who have had sexsomnia with their girlfriends or wives, and it's a real thing.
And do they ever do it by themselves?
Yeah, you got auto-masturbation, that's another thing. A lot of the wives will report that the husband's masturbating violently at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and his eyes are wide open, he's glazed, and when she talks to him, he can't respond. So, yeah, people will have forms of masturbation. Sometimes it's just sexual vocalization is very common in the women who have it. And yet they have no memory for it when they're awoken within 10 minutes after doing it.
Okay. Now, Doc, I want to discuss this Michael Jackson story because he went, according to CNN piece here, 60 days without any real sleep.
Yeah.
And his doctor, Conrad Murray, used to drug him with propofol.
Right.
So let's discuss a couple things going on here. Why can't Michael Jackson fall asleep? Why, he was just mentally disturbed. He liked to touch little boys. I mean, he was a really messed up dude.
Really was.
Probably a lot to do with his family, and he was a disaster of an epic proportion.
Sure.
Although he cut a couple good albums in the 80s, but he's still insane.
Right.
So why can't he sleep for 60 days? And then tell us about propofol, the drug that he was getting. Walk us through this.
Okay. As far as sleeping, before he started propofol, he obviously had severe chronic insomnia and probably was being treated with medications, which he had become refractory to, which is not unusual. Had he sought out a sleep specialist back then, and they tried behavioral techniques, and maybe this never would have happened. By the time he got to the point of Dr. Murray, who's a cardiologist with no training in sleep whatsoever, he decided to use propofol on him, which is wild. And we don't normally, you're not even allowed to use propofol outside of an intensive care unit. And propofol is basically an anesthetic agent that's used to induce sleep and surgery. And if you're in the intensive care unit, not a ventilator, don't be surprised if your loved one may be on a propofol drip for 8 to 9 days until they recover. So it is common. Now, say there's no sleep for 60 days. On propofol, I have a hard time with. You are asleep. Actually, propofol increases delta or slow-wave sleep. What the doctor in this case is saying is that propofol, and it's true, depresses dream sleep, and then there's a kind of a leap in my mind to say, well, with the absence of dream sleep, you're sleep-deprived. And I'm sure the propofol had some definite effect on what happened to Michael, but the theory that lack of dream sleep or REM sleep caused it doesn't make sense to me completely because we know there are people on antidepressants who have had no REM sleep for 5 or 10 years. So, and we also know there were people who had brain surgery on the area of the brain that produces REM sleep, and they no longer have REM sleep, and they function just fine. So I'm sure there's a relationship between the propofol, probably, but to say that the depression or REM sleep, to me, is a little confusing and might even alarm a lot of people on antidepressants who've been told in sleep labs you have no REM sleep. And I'm afraid some of these people might start calling their doctors going, oh, my God, am I going to end up like Michael Jackson? So that's why I'm glad you asked me to come on today.
Okay. And then how long can a human being go out without any sleep whatsoever? So like in Michael Jackson's case, they were putting him under. They were giving him propofol, and he was going out that way. But walk us through two scenarios. One, I mean, forget the propofol. How long can you go without sleep before you die?
Well, no one has ever done that. The longest, period. So the longest experiment on someone going without sleep was done on a radio station in New York back in, I think, the 60s. And the guy went without sleep for 264 hours.
Okay, so what is that? It's like 1.5 weeks, like 10 days, 11 days?
Yeah, and after the 264 hours, he slept for 15 hours, and guess what? The next day, he was fine.
Hmm.
So I mean, and that is the longest recorded episode of sleep deprivation done under control.
What about, I mean, do insomniacs just ever die from lack of sleep, or do they, like right when they're about to die, the body puts you in an automatic sleep phase and they don't die?
Well, there's one form of insomnia that causes death, and that's called fatal familial insomnia. It's extraordinarily rare, and these people literally don't sleep for months, and they also have other problems with their body associated with disease. So we can't say for sure that it was the insomnia that caused them to die. But people with insomnia don't die of insomnia itself. There's increased incidence of high blood pressure and heart disease and chronic insomniacs. And I've had insomniacs come to me who've gone 3 or 4 days without sleep. And then we also have insomniacs who've come to me and swear they haven't slept in 4 months. And, of course, the problem is they have what's called sleep state misperception. When they're sleeping, they perceive they're not sleeping.
Hmm.
You can literally wake them up during a stage of sleep in the laboratory, and they're not lying, and they will look up at you and say, oh, I'm awake. I was awake. No, I wasn't sleeping. And then, you know, you show them the electroencephalogram and you say, no, you were sleeping. And this is also very common in vets coming back from Vietnam, from Iraq now. They're developing this form of insomnia because while sleeping or attempting to sleep, they have to be so hypervigilant in the battlefield that their sleep is so light that they lost the ability to discern sleep from non-sleep.
Hmm. I've had that sometimes. You get up in the morning and you're not sure how well you slept or if you slept at all. I get that. And is that ever alcohol-induced where you don't sleep well because you drank the night before?
Well, yeah, alcohol will do two things. It'll help induce sleep in the beginning. By the way, it depresses REM sleep. And then the second half of the night, as the alcohol leaves your system, your sympathetic nervous system and your body temperature all go up. And the sympathetic nervous system, the flight or fright system, begins to come in. And that causes a withdrawal. And in some people, that wakes them up from sleep and they can't get back to sleep. And that's why I urge people not to use alcohol on a regular basis for sleep. It's only going to cause problems.
But what if it calms you down? You know, if you have a mind that races and alcohol, you have a drink or two and it relaxes you and that allows you to fall asleep, or you take an Advil PM. I mean, isn't that better than the alternative, staying up all night?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that you keep the alcohol doesn't have its place in moderation, although I still think that, you know, that you should probably, if you occasionally have a night where you're stressed and you take a drink, why not? And if that helps. But if you're somebody who's relying on it every night because you can't fall asleep, then it's probably best to see somebody, a healthcare provider or a sleep specialist, to start to get into the whys and wherefores. It may be poor sleep hygiene. It may be that you have an associated depression or anxiety disorder, which no one has recognized, and that is what is causing the problem.
Okay, now, Doc, I just want to reintroduce Dr. Robert Rosenberg, expert in the world of sleep medicine. He runs 2 sleep disorder clinics, and we're talking about the news out of the Michael Jackson trial today, that Michael Jackson went 60 days without sleeping before he died. Couple other questions, doctor, about sleep. What percentage of Americans have sleep disorders? And then what percentage have the terrible insomnia, like their life is horrible? So walk us through people who have trouble and people who have insomnia.
If we talk about all sleep disorders, including sleep apnea, we might be talking about 50 or 60% of the population. If we're talking about insomnia, we have about 30 or 40% of people a year who experience some problems with sleep. Now, if we're talking about the horrible insomnia, which we define as chronic insomnia, which lasts greater than 3 months, that's probably 10 to 15% of the population.
That's higher than I would think. Yeah, and then the average amount of hours that you're supposed to sleep, and then what is the average American actually, what do they sleep?
Great question. The average amount that you should be sleeping is 7 to 8 hours. Okay, what's happening is about a third of the population, not due to insomnia, but due to the fact that they're trying to burn the candle at both ends, is sleeping, according to the last National Sleep Foundation poll, are sleeping less than 6 hours. And we think that that lack of sleep correlates with the epidemic of obesity and diabetes, because we know that lack of sleep results in diabetes and in obesity.
Right. And for a lot of people, though, they don't have a choice. They got to work. And it's like, I always see, you know, you have these people on television like, oh, you should sleep 8 to 10 hours a night. And it's like, I don't need Angelina Jolie telling me to sleep 10 hours a night when she is a personal chef and a private jet, you know?
Right. Agree with you.
All right.
You know, there are people who can do well on 6 hours or 6.5 hours, but unfortunately there's a lot of people who don't, and they're developing psychiatric and medical problems as a result.
Okay. Doc, a couple more things. Circadian rhythm. I always hear this, that the brain has an internal clock, that we like to go to bed at night for a certain reason and wake up during the day. Can you tell us about that? And then also tell us about people who work the night shift. A lot of people listen to my program. You know, some of them, they work at night or they're catching me on their way to work at night. Tell us about people who work at night. Walk us through all that.
Okay. First of all, briefly, the circadian clock resides in the suprachiasmatic nucleus right by the hypothalamus. We don't want to get too technical. At about 8 or 9 o'clock in most people, in response to darkness, it begins to stimulate the production of melatonin from another part of the brain. Melatonin is a sleep hormone that helps you fall asleep. So normally your circadian cycle, the melatonin increases about 9 o'clock, peaks at about 4 o'clock in the morning, then goes down, and that allows you to begin to wake up over a period of time. Now, we've got people who don't produce melatonin until 3 or 4 in the morning, and those are your night owls who probably end up being your shift workers because they do much better at night than they do during the day. So that's one thing. Now, as far as your shift workers, I deal with a lot of people with shift workers disorder. What a lot of shift workers try to do is, like, I have a guy who came to see me the other day who's working from 7 p.m. to 4 o'clock in the morning. And he comes home and he goes to bed at 7:30, and he works 3 or 4 days a week. Then, on the days off, he tries to go back to a normal sleep-wake schedule with his family and go to bed at 10 o'clock and get up at 7 in the morning, and he can't do it. He can't fall asleep to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So I told him, that as a shift worker, you try to mirror your shift work as much as you can, even on your off days. I don't expect you to have the same schedule, but I said, let's make a compromise. How about you go to bed 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on the days when you're not working? And he started doing that, and he was more comfortable. I also advised him, and I advise low shift workers, when you're going home, don't drink any coffee in the last 1-2 hours of the shift. That's going to keep you awake. Also, if you can get blue blocker sunglasses, because they screen out the blue light, which is the most stimulating light, you'll find it much easier to fall asleep. And if all else fails, I sometimes advise my patients to take a small dose of melatonin upon coming home, and that helps them to sleep.
Okay, and then, Doc, that's what I wanted to pick your brain last. We have a minute left. So solutions for, like, me, your average guy, to help me sleep better. You know, sometimes I do, like, the Advil PM thing, sometimes a glass of scotch.
Sure.
What are some other things? Watching TV actually calms me at night. It stops my brain from, like, thinking too much. What else do you recommend?
Well, with you it may work, Andy, but for most people I would say no television in the bedroom. Watch your TV if you're going to watch it in another room. No computers within 1 to 2 hours of bedtime. Get the room dark. Get a nice temperature, about 68 degrees. Between 65 and 70 degrees is probably the most comfortable. If your bedroom is too warm, you're going to have a hard time falling asleep. And so you've got to get things calmed down, but bright lights, especially computers, are a no-no. So, and no caffeine after 5 or 6 o'clock at night. And if you're having insomnia problems, I tell my patients no caffeine after noon.
And what is this I hear, like, if you eat red meat late at night or any type of steak or hamburger, that hurts with sleep? Is that true or is that an urban legend?
What's happening is if you eat protein with no carbohydrates, the amino acid that comes out of protein is called tyrosine. And tyrosine gets converted to epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are excitatory hormones, and they tend to keep us awake and energized. If you combine some protein with some carbohydrates, the carbohydrates will help you get tryptophan into the brain, and tryptophan goes on to become melatonin. So, yeah, if you're eating pure protein at night, you may find it hard to fall asleep.
Okay, so what does that mean, Doc, in English? Like, so what should I eat, fish, chicken, what?
What I would do is I'd combine a little bit of protein with some carbohydrates like cheese and crackers or turkey, a half a turkey sandwich. You don't want to eat too much. So you want to combine your protein, but you want to combine it with some type of a complex carbohydrate that will help you to...
So is that like a bread or a rice?
Exactly, especially...
Okay.
Wheat bread, breads that, yeah, not white bread, but bread, rice, couscous, things like that, beans, legumes, they're excellent to help you fall asleep.
Okay. Well, Doc, I really appreciate your expertise. You're in a cool, extremely cool field of medicine. I got to have you on more often.
Thank you.
Because I feel like I have 1,000 questions to ask, but Miranda's coming in studio and she's going to yell at me. All right. Dr. Robert Rosenberg, once again, you run a couple medical clinics in Arizona. Doc, is there any way, do we have a website for you or just?
I have both on Facebook and on a website called answersforsleep.com, where if anybody writes in any question to me, we try to have it answered within 24 hours and get it back on the website for them. Same thing on Facebook, that's answersforsleep.com.
Okay, answersforsleep.com. And then we should link to your Facebook page, Doc, because I have a ton more questions. We'll get you back on again soon. Thank you.
Ready?
All right, Doc. Good stuff.